It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Biden signed an executive order yesterday to extend a federal evictions ban through the end of March. We'll talk with a housing law expert about what the moratorium has meant for renters and property owners here in Wisconsin. First, during the first 6 months of the COVID-19 pandemic, workers age 55 and older were 17% more likely to lose their jobs than employees who were just a few years younger. And while some older workers may have involuntarily retired after losing a job or leaving the workforce in recent months, others are still looking for jobs, for something in their field or something new. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you made a career move as a middle-aged or older adult? Was it a choice or a necessity? Are you considering doing something different with your job right now? Have you been employed as an older worker, 40, 50 up? What has that looked like for you during the pandemic? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carrie Hannon is a work, entrepreneurship, and personal finance expert. She's the author of several books related to the topic, including Never Too Old to Get Rich, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Starting a Business Midlife, and What's Next? Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond. Carrie, welcome back to the show.
Oh, terrific to be here, Rob. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, there's never a good time of life, Carrie, to lose one's job, but what are some of the unique challenges for people, you know, halfway through their career or well into their career, 40s, 50s, 60s, what do they face when they lose that job?
Yeah, you know, it is truly, it can be really, really tough slog for many people. It does not have to be. But one of the big issues, I think, is people try to replicate their old job. And so, you know, they try to make everything look for exactly the job they had previously. And really, this is a time to open up, you know, look broadly about how your past experience can transfer to something new, because the world of work has been transformed radically over the last year. So we need to get our mindset straight and say, okay, we don't want to necessarily replicate our old job. But, you know, we need to start thinking about how our past experience can move to something new.
Yeah, I think about workers of all ages really in those lines of work hit hardest by the pandemic, in, you know, restaurants or entertainment or just anywhere where people have to gather or it doesn't make sense to do that. They can't just move to another restaurant job or entertainment job or things like that. What kind of things could people in that situation look at for to where their skills could translate into another kind of work?
Yeah, the first thing, you know, don't panic, right? And I know it's very frightening. What you need to do is really sit down and do take a little time to do some self-evaluation. You know, really take a sense. Don't just throw out that resume that you've had, you know, and just desperately send it to a dozen companies or so. This is really the time to take a look at what skills you have. What have you been doing? And really pull it apart. Maybe ask people you know about what you're really good at. Sometimes we don't even remember or realize it because it's so natural to us. And you also want to say, okay, what do I really want to do? Yeah, you're looking for a job. You're looking for what's open. But think about what it is that you'd really like to do that you would be passionate about. And then you can start trolling some of those job boards and looking at some of those companies who you're interested in, their websites, to see what kind of jobs are out there. And that's how you start the process. The next step is finding out who do you know that works there.
Yeah, how do we do that? I mean, there's that networking thing, and I know networking is kind of a dirty word for some people, but how can we do some of that positive, you know, contact tracing to see who we know that might help us segue into that new line of work?
Yes, exactly. I like to say networking is one letter away from not working. So get over yourself, get out there and tell everyone you know that you are looking for work. It is not something to be embarrassed about. So many people lost their jobs this year or in the past year. So you really need to, one of the easiest things to do, Rob, is get on LinkedIn. If you don't already have a profile there, set one up. You know, really get a great LinkedIn profile and it lets you personalize your background and your skills and volunteer experiences and all those kinds of great things. You can put up videos or, you know, presentations you've made. There's a great place to market yourself and it's easy to get in and out of. It's not hard to do. And that's a great place to look for people you know who might be able to help you. And again, you're not asking them for a job, but you're looking to who your contacts might be on LinkedIn and say, oh, you know, they work at such and such a company that I'm intrigued by. I see they have this job opening. Maybe they can help make an introduction for me or tell me a little bit about, you know, what the company's like. So that's probably your easiest way, but there's other great ways we can. I have someone I know who found a job recently because he was talking at the dinner table to his son's friend. And he said, I'm looking for a job. I think it was teaching English as a second language. And he said, well, you know, you should talk to my mom. And that made that connection. So it's not necessarily your first connection. It can be a second connection.
We're talking to Carrie Hannon about what to do when we need to or want to change careers halfway through, two-thirds of the way through our working life, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. She's the author of a bunch of books, including What's Next? Finding Your Passion, Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, and your stories as someone who works and maybe is changing careers or someone who hires people. Let's go to your calls now. Jim is with us in Beaver Dam. Jim, hi.
Hello, how are you doing? Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, what's your story, Jim?
So I'm in construction. Ended up having to leave one job due to an injury. And so I started this other job last year, putting pools in the ground, and took off, you know, hit the ground running. Everything was going fine, but we ended up having to shut down way early because we were not able to get the parts for the pools because of the COVID. It had shut down the manufacturing plants that made the parts that we needed.
Oh, are you looking? I mean, obviously, right now you're not digging up in-ground pools, but do things look like they're going to be smoothed out by the time the ground softens up this year, Jim?
You know, I, to be honest, with the second wave and how, because I never knew it until I started into this trade. I work with machinery, and so that's why the transition over to the digging pools was smooth for me. But the parts for the pools are made in New York. And with New York being hit, well, predominantly made in New York, and with New York being hit as hard as it was or is with the COVID, I'm worried about what's coming come spring.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Jim. I hope things smooth out in the supply chain there and you're back to work. Carrie, Jim actually did what you're talking about. He translated his construction career into something he could work with post-injury, digging up pools. But the pandemic hit his plan B as well as his plan A.
I know. And that, you know, it's terrific because he actually did do the smart thing there. And he just has to, you know, keep focusing on moving forward. And hopefully the pandemic will not put a stop on all of that. But, you know, some things are out of our hands. So you just have to keep trying to reinvent and rejigger what you're doing to fit where the niches might be.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Jane now, calling from Manitowoc. Jane, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that veterans in the state of Wisconsin have great opportunities for training. First off, myself, when I was switching career fields, I had gone to Lakeshore Technical College, got them to take all my civilian and military experience and all my training through the military, converted into credits and designed two associate degrees for me. And at the same time, I also ended up with a technical certificate, and I only took 9 classes.
Oh, my gosh, Jane, I love this story. This is so great.
Yeah, so, you know, taking that experience into the schools could possibly get you halfway or further toward a degree. And the other thing is, in the state of Wisconsin, we have a separate GI Bill. So if a veteran is a home of record soldier or has lived here for more than 5 years after leaving service as somebody that may have entered from California, they can go and apply for a Wisconsin GI Bill, which basically waives the tuition at any state college or state technical school.
Jane, so thanks a lot for sharing that. That's great information. I'm hearing a couple things there, Carrie. First of all, I think there might be a lot of people in categories, in this case, veterans, who might not know the kinds of help that are available just for them.
Yeah, and I think that's terrific. And there is some wonderful opportunities that, as Jane just mentioned, that, you know, really to look into. And I can provide it with you later. I have some websites. I recently wrote a column about military transitions, and there's some great websites that really can help you find those programs in your area. And it's very important for career transition.
And then Jane also brings up the issue of, you know, getting training, retraining, certified for a new job. When that person, again, halfway through their career or beyond, is looking to go into a new thing, Carrie, how do they weigh the costs versus benefits of, you know, getting education, a certification, whatever it might be?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. This is the time to do that. In fact, we should always be keeping our skills ramped up and current, because in today's world, things move quickly. Things are updated all the time. But when you're transitioning to something new, you really need to make sure you understand. You'll look at those job postings and go, you know, and if you don't have the skill that they're asking for, maybe this is his time to get it. You maybe not need every one of the things they're asking for in that job description, but you need some of them. And so you might start taking a few classes or, you know, reaching out to see what's available before you spend a lot of money, though. And in today's world, with the virtual learning is just skyrocketing, the opportunities to learn online without having to spend a huge amount of money to go back for a degree program. You know, you might be able to get that certificate, like Jane mentioned, and it doesn't have to be a huge time commitment nor a financial commitment. So be very careful about what you choose to do. But if it's going into an area that you want to move to and you know what the job, what it might require, talk to people in that job and say, you know, it, or people who have received the certification you're looking for and say, you know, is this worth it? Did this help you? What kinds of employers are looking for this? But again, everything is, you can start with just one class to ramp up skills in an area that really hone your skills, because that's going to make you more marketable. And that's what a hiring manager is going to look for, that you're going to use this downtime to be doing something. You're active, you're learning, you're adding to your skills. You're not just sitting back and, you know, feeling sorry for yourself or sending out resumes. You're actually self-improvement and making yourself more marketable.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Carrie Hannon, work and career transitions expert. She's written a lot of books on the subject, including Great Jobs for Everyone 50 Plus. We're talking about how to handle unemployment when you're in your later stages of your work or your career. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If this is you, you've had to make a career move, maybe unexpected or maybe something you wanted to do. Tell us how it went, what you did, whether you got extra training or if you struggled to make that switch. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Carrie Hannon, a career transitions expert. Her books include What's Next? Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have questions or maybe a story to share. 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Anthony is with us, calling from Eau Claire. Anthony, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great conversation.
What did you want to tell us about, Anthony?
Well, I've been a massage therapist for 30 years, and of course, the pandemic had us shut down for a time. And it forced me to begin some projects that I've been procrastinating on for a long time, and also to develop my skills that I'd learned over the years as a massage therapist. And so I started a couple of new projects and just completed them just about now. So COVID was the impetus for me to stop procrastinating and kind of build into my dream.
What did you do? What kind of new things did you do when you couldn't actually do the hands-on work?
So what I did is I did a video series on mindfulness, a very short mindfulness course, and I'm really proud of that. And then I've also started to teach my yoga classes online, because I'm also a yoga teacher, and teach meditation, which is something that I've done but have never stepped up to teach.
Fantastic. Well, Anthony, yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I was just going to say, I absolutely love the way you were able to build on your existing skill set, but take it to a new platform and kind of embrace technology, which is exactly what needed to be done to be virtually available. And probably you can reach more people this way than you did as a massage therapist.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story, Anthony. I appreciate it. Now, Carrie, there might be a lot of people with that skill they could share, but maybe without the skills, the online skills that Anthony had. What kind of things can they do to maybe overcome their fears of trying to learn an online platform?
I know, you've just got to do it. And you know, if you, I used to always ask my nieces to help me, but there's actually a really neat platform that I've just heard about and I've started working with called Get Set Up. And they do really basic stuff, like how do you get started setting up a Zoom stuff. And it's a relatively new platform, but they're interactive classes for people in this age category. And so you're not just trying to teach yourself from a YouTube video, which of course you can do that as well. But this is just, you have somebody with you on the other side of the screen that can answer your questions. And, you know, I'm not trying to do a big plug for them, but it's an online community that has these really basic tech skills that I think are kind of interesting to look at. There's another one called Senior Planet that does similar kind of classes that are they're inexpensive, and in some cases, they're free.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story, Anthony. We'll go now to Robin calling from Appleton. Robin, hi.
Hi there.
What's your story, Robin?
In my mid-50s, I was a construction estimator at the height of the recession. My company was sold, and my job went with it, and did not know what to do. I went back to college and got my degree as an occupational therapy assistant. I am now in the best job of my life. It was not a door closing. It was a huge window opening. I work with adults with different abilities, helping them get jobs in the community. So don't be afraid to think outside the box. Don't be afraid to try something different, something you may not have ever thought of before.
Robin, thanks a lot. Carrie, sounds like Robin's right out of your playbook there.
I like Robin. It's all about your mindset. And actually, in reality, at this stage of our lives, nothing has to be forever. It's not like your linear career where you felt like you're going to do this the rest of your life. At this stage, you might do something for 5 years. Not that Robin will, but she has longer. But, you know, you may switch and do something completely different, or you might do this and something else. So don't get locked into the decision I make today, the job I go after today is what I need. I'm going to be doing the rest of my life. That is not true. It's like a patchwork quilt.
Thanks, Robin, for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We're talking about making career transitions in the second or maybe even third act of your working career. Carrie Hannon is with us. Her books include What's Next? Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond. Carrie, a lot of people are working at home because of the pandemic now, and I know you've looked pre-pandemic. I think you were looking at, you know, working at home options. If people want to do that, even if there's not a pandemic, what kind of things should they consider and how can they avoid? I know there are a lot of work at home scams and spams out there.
Yeah, there are some really great work at home jobs today, and this isn't going away. The genie is out of the bottle. There's going to be more and more of them. And for workers in this age group, I think it's fantastic because it kind of eliminates that commute when we get back to doing that. And ageism doesn't jump into the question as much, because when you're not standing next to somebody who's 20 years younger, then it, you know, sort of that the visual thing is a little bit easier. You're judged on your performance and the quality of your work and your productivity. This is great. So I suggest there's some really excellent job boards so you can start sleuthing around. Flexjobs.com is one I like a lot, but there's lots of them. I have a new book called Great Pajama Jobs, and I talk a lot about different avenues. But in every field that you can think of, there's some great remote options. But you want to make sure, check with the Better Business Bureau. Make sure, you know, do a web search to make sure there's nothing, you know, anything you can find out about a company. And really, the red flags are if anyone's asking you to send them money to get started working for them, that's not going to work. And, you know, there's some, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But many, many legitimate companies have great work from home opportunities. And there's so many opportunities today. And I think we're just going to see more of that.
We heard from Dave in La Crosse, who says that he works in heating and cooling, constantly looking for people in that line of work. Dave says other trades like plumbing and construction are in the same position and happy to train folks. Now, people in their 40s or 50s might not have it on the radar to, at this point in their life, enter into a trade. What do you think of that option, Carrie?
I think trades are fantastic. I mean, honestly, there's so many. I think this is the, as infrastructure, particularly in America, starts getting some attention paid to it. So with the housing market, people are doing stuff in their homes. This is a skill that is so treasured. If you have a skilled trade, I think you're going to find work in today's economy, and it's going to continue to grow. And there are some great avenues to do that, that again, doesn't have to cost a fortune to do, but you can take great pride in your work, and you're in demand. Trust me, you're in demand. And so I think that skilled trades are a wonderful way. And again, that LinkedIn is not going to be a way for the skilled trades necessarily to find the work you're looking for, but there are other great, more even Facebook community networking you can do to find work that way.
In our last few moments, Carrie, aside from the practical advice, can you give a little pep talk to help people keep a positive mindset in what might be a tough time during this transition while looking for a new job?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back with some of what our callers have said is this positive mindset that, yes, in fact, you are going to find something. And at the moment you see, you may think, you know, that door is shut. It is opening somewhere else. I know it's trite, but it's true. And you don't realize it until you've made that turn. One thing I did want to mention is you need to, you know, beef up that resume, redo your resume, because your resume is not your obituary. It is an advertisement. So you want to stick to the last 10 years of the work you've done. Tell your car story or the challenge you faced, the action you did, and the result. You want to tell a narrative to let employers know a little bit about you. So don't focus going back 20 years. Keep it short and simple and snap it up a little bit. So that's really, really important. And I also think it's important to, if possible, when you're in an interview with somebody, be curious. It goes a long way to fighting ageism, even if it's very subtle, because it shows that you're looking forward and you're not stuck in the past. So, you know, you might say, well, something I'm really curious about, when to start a phrase when you're doing an interview, because it may be a virtual interview, of course, but being curious is something that is quite appealing, and it shows an active mind.
Carrie, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
Carrie Hannon is a work, entrepreneurship, and personal finance expert. Her books include Never Too Old to Get Rich and What's Next, Finding Your Passion and Your Dream Job in Your 40s, 50s, and Beyond. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent and her guests look at the latest COVID-19 testing technology and the rate of false negative results for some kinds of tests. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Now, among the executive orders signed already by President Biden was one calling on the CDC to extend its nationwide moratorium on most evictions through the end of March. The ban had been extended twice already through executive action by President Trump and again by Congress. It was set to expire on January 31st. Biden is also hoping for $25 billion of new rental assistance as part of his economic relief plan. He talked about that plan last week.
We'll take action to extend nationwide restrictions on evictions and foreclosures. This will provide more than 25 million Americans greater stability instead of living on the edge every single month. And I'm asking Congress to do its part by funding rental assistance for 14 million hard-hit families and tenants.
We're taking a look now at the impact of the eviction moratorium and what people should know before it's eventually lifted. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had trouble paying rent during the course of the pandemic? Is the extension of the eviction ban good news for you? If you're a property owner, how are you doing after almost 5 months of the moratorium, more months of the disease and the economic problems it's caused? What is communication like between you and your tenants? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Mitch is a clinical law professor and director of the Economic Justice Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School. He's an expert on rental housing law and a property owner himself. Mitch, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, this is a moratorium on evictions, but it doesn't block all evictions, if I understand it correctly. What does this federal moratorium actually do?
So the moratorium, this has been in place now since September 4th. It stops evictions due to non-payment of rent. So for folks who cannot pay rent and who have filled out a declaration saying that they've taken certain steps in order to make basically every best effort that they can to obtain assistance and pay as much rent as possible, if they're not able to meet their full rental obligation or any rental obligation, they should not be evicted if they complete that declaration and give that to their property owner.
So on the advice side for that renter who's having trouble paying, I guess the message there is don't just stop paying. There are steps you need to take to be eligible for this moratorium. Is that right?
That's right. And as a matter of fact, I mean, on the advice side of things, what I say is actually I would tell property owners, don't evict someone who's not paying rent right now, because even if someone doesn't fill out the declaration saying that they've made every effort, what's happening is you're violating the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is to create stability, right, which is really important right now. And there is additional money coming down the line here from the federal government. It's being given to the states and made available. Actually, with a bill signed in late December, there's going to be another allotment of money coming to the states. So the best thing for a lessor or property owner to do is to not kick out their renters, because if they do, they won't be able to access some of this money, which will be able to go to pay existing renters' rents, and it will go directly to property owners, so long as those renters help the property owners in filling out the forms. So you want to keep your renters in place so that you can get some stabilizing funds.
What are we seeing when it comes to people falling behind on their rent over this year, basically, of pandemic?
Oh, so many. I mean, so many. You know, according to some studies and some surveys that have been done, you know, as many as 34% of renters in Wisconsin is one number that I've seen from a study done, have had struggled with paying rent. 34% of renting households. So that's a large number, certainly larger than normal. You know, in the ordinary rental housing market, we see evictions happen all the time. And right now we aren't seeing that, but certainly there are property owners who are feeling it, right? They're feeling not being able to get rent, not being able to pay their mortgage. You know, again, there's a sense to sort of lash out at renters who aren't paying, but nobody wants to not pay their rent. Everybody wishes that they were still employed and still able to pay their rent. So it's really about banding together, owners and renters and really everyone, and saying, you know, we need to continue to stabilize the economy and not have, you know, even more sort of economic disruption amidst this global pandemic.
We're talking to Mitch, clinical law professor at the UW-Madison Law School, looking at an eviction moratorium extended for another couple months, just last night, basically. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you having rent trouble as a tenant or as a landlord? Do you have questions about how this works? Are there things you'd like to see from the state or federal government on the issue of people having trouble meeting their rent? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. And Mitch, you mentioned property owners. Is there a concern that we're going to, you know, lose some of our rental property companies, maybe our smaller ones in particular, because they're not getting the revenue they counted on to, as you said, help pay the mortgages for their buildings?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every single business, right? I mean, there is not a business that hasn't been impacted by the pandemic. You know, streaming viewership is up, but most businesses, like restaurants, are struggling. And the rental property business is exactly that. It's a business which has generally been quite rock solid because everybody needs a place to live. And so rental property owners have been in this pretty lucky position of being generally able to collect most of their rent. And when they can't, they can go through a legal eviction process to really quickly get somebody out of a home if they aren't paying rent normally, and then try to get somebody else in. And so that's sort of the normal trained response behavior is if someone doesn't pay, you move to evict them and you get somebody else in who can. And the problem is right now, you can't evict people who aren't paying. And moreover, we're seeing folks who are being non-renewed, which is sort of a loophole in this law. Some people who are being non-renewed or they're being evicted for reasons that technically don't have to do with non-payment of rent. And the tricky part is, how do you get somebody in who can pay rent during a pandemic when unemployment rates are really, really high and payments are way down, you know, income is down. So, again, my suggestion is to work with your renters, keep them in place, keep the stability in your local communities, get access to the funding that's coming in, because the trained sort of response that everybody in the rental market does not work for this sort of situation.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 as we talk about an eviction moratorium extended at the federal level and the challenges facing renters and rentees, the people who rent places out. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Mitch stays with us from the UW-Madison Law School. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Mitch, clinical law professor and director of UW-Madison's Economic Justice Institute, talking about what the ongoing federal evictions ban means for renters and property owners here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your experiences. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go to our callers now. Lindsay is with us in Madison. Lindsay, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. I work with a lot of families that are in this situation and have seen where landlords have gotten thousands and thousands of dollars of rental assistance in the previous round and then still threaten to evict them if they don't meet that amount. And I'm wondering if there's any protections for tenants that are tied to the funding in regards to if the idea of the money is to prevent eviction, but if the landlords take the money and then still proceed with eviction.
Got it, Lindsay. Thanks. Mitch, what do you say?
Yeah, there absolutely is. So just in general, anytime anyone fills out what would be called a sort of false federal claim, there's an existing federal law for making fraudulent claims on to receive government money. And with the moratorium, I believe the penalty was authorized up to $250,000, which is a significant penalty, right, for falsely taking some rent money. So you'd absolutely, if this is something, first off, thank you, Lindsay, for helping out renters and families. And this is something that if you're getting reports of this, it's something that you would want to report probably to the local United States attorney, right? That would be sort of the federal prosecutor. So the U.S. Attorney's Office would be one good place to go to because they are typically the enforcement mechanism for violations of federal law. So that's who I would ring up and report these instances to.
Thanks for calling in, Lindsay. We'll go to John next in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hi. I just had a question. Like, I guess during the pandemic, right, we kind of have this moratorium, but I guess my question is, what is the backside of this going to look like? And what is the, you know, downstream consequences of, you know, all the second, third order effects when people start, you know, having to, you know, either face like a reduced income or whatever post-pandemic, like, is anybody really talking or concerned about that, you know?
John, thanks for the call. And I've heard concerns, Mitch, in particular about, okay, if there's a moratorium, you just keep falling further and further behind on your rent. Even the additional federal assistance isn't letting people come up. So at some point, the moratorium ends and people are pretty behind with their rent. And what happens then?
Right. That's why it's really important what we're seeing and what everybody needs to be sort of pushing their representatives and leaders for is rental assistance that goes hand in hand with any moratorium. Because every business takes a hit, right? Every business has taken a hit. You know, if it falls solely on the property owners, you know, who when the moratorium ends, they lash back out and kick out renters, that is going to lead to secondary and tertiary consequences. So the key thing is that we are seeing now there's another $25 billion in rental assistance coming at the federal level that's going to trickle out to states. It's not enough, right? That's not enough for, you know, the entire nation. One thing that could be pushed for if you were thinking about, like, how do we deal with something like this? Should the pandemic go on or should we face another pandemic? Would be to say, you know, if only there were some program that was already in place, which provided rental assistance for folks who couldn't pay rent or lost their job or had a reduction in income. And the truth is that we actually have two programs that do that. We have unemployment insurance and we have Section 8. Both of those programs are vastly underfunded and aren't really equipped for this situation, but they could be expanded so that we wouldn't be back into this sort of herky-jerky stop-start moratorium without funding, extension of the moratorium with some funding. You know, we could think about a smart policy that expands either Section 8 or unemployment benefits, or maybe both, in such a way that when there is a mass reduction in income, that there's money made available automatically so that we don't have to, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel next time.
Time for one more call. Ron is with us calling from Eau Claire. Ron, hello.
Hi. What do you do with somebody that takes advantage of the system? She was struggling for quite a while, and all of a sudden when she found out she can't get evicted, she just stopped paying. And, of course, she has gotten her stimulus check, which she was going to pay us with, but now she don't want to use that. She just, what do you do with somebody like that?
Ron,
yeah,
thanks for the call. Go ahead, Mitch.
Go ahead. I would take that person and I would say, hey, look, you know, like, let's go together and explain why whatever stimulus money you received wasn't enough. You know, I'm assuming that the person probably had some things that they needed to spend that on. There's very few folks, particularly Midwest sort of pride that everybody has here in Wisconsin, that want to take advantage of one another. You know, one or two may do this and we end up, you know, sort of citing the exception and thinking maybe that's the rule. But you have to work with one another, resist that sort of urge to sort of say, oh, if you didn't pay, I'm going to evict you. Instead, say, hey, you know what? It looks like you're struggling. Let's go together and contact our local representatives. Let's push for more aid. Let's explain the situation. You got this stimulus check and it's not enough. And you're struggling. And now I'm your property owner and I'm struggling. And together we're multiple votes. So send us more aid, expand these programs. That's what you do.
Thanks a lot for that call. Looking at long-term, Mitch, and how this could all affect the rental housing market, what kind of things are you watching for, maybe worried about in the months and years to come?
You know, again, my hope is, my worry is that we don't learn from this and that we just, you know, keep on putting on little Band-Aids that surprise us with, you know, a brief extension here or a brief extension there. There was a fantastic article today published in the New York Times about the unemployment system and how it was a great way to address mass unemployment during the Great Depression, but it's languished and no longer fits the bill. So we could learn to build a better system so that when inevitably we have another sort of outbreak or other type of issue in the future, we don't struggle as much as we did. That's what we owe to all future generations, is to learn from these hardships and make it better for them. And the way we do that is we build a more resilient system and learn from this.
Mitch, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Mitch is a clinical law professor and director of the Economic Justice Institute at the UW-Madison Law School. He talked with us today about what the federal evictions ban has meant for property owners and renters here in the state. President Biden extended that ban through an executive order yesterday and now is set to expire at the end of March instead of the end of January as originally scheduled. On a related topic, a developer in Milwaukee says his goal is to bring nice, affordable housing to parts of the city that have missed out on economic development in recent years. As Corrine Hess reports, the Milwaukee Natives Project could help meet a need and revitalize some parts of the city.
When Q Elamine was a kid, his parents loved to leave Milwaukee to visit larger cities. Elamine loved it too because he could see how other buildings were designed. Elamine's passion for buildings never went away, but as the city he grew up in changed, so did his purpose. Today, the young developer is working to build affordable homes for people living in some of the city's most economically challenged neighborhoods.
You know, I've grown up in Milwaukee. I've seen how it changed. Being from here, it's just nice to be able to come back in and revitalize the area.
Elamine has a wiry frame and a huge infectious smile. The combination makes him look a decade younger than his 36 years. When he was a kid, he rode his bicycle up and down Villard Avenue, once Milwaukee's original downtown. There are still shops there, but the street on Milwaukee's northwest side is far from the city's economic center. Elamine is building 43 affordable townhomes here. And last summer, he kicked off a $60 million project a few miles away. It will transform a former Briggs & Stratton industrial site into about 200 apartments when it opens next year. Elamine says he knows what stable housing can do for a person.
You know, like when you're in a stable environment, like you're a lot more creative, you're a lot more, your grades are better, you know, you have good relationships. It's just like being in like a safe environment is like the first step to doing anything else.
According to the Wisconsin Policy Forum, the median rent in Milwaukee County is about $860 a month. That's lower than many peer counties. But Milwaukee has more families living near the poverty line. More than one-third of Milwaukee households earn less than $20,000 a year. Joe Pietrangelo is a senior researcher at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He says those households can only afford to spend about $500 a month on rent.
So that doesn't leave much room to cover other needs like food, transportation, healthcare, and not to mention unexpected expenses that may arise.
The city spends about $12 million a year on housing assistance. That money supports renters and people who want to purchase their own homes. Pietrangelo says Milwaukee needs to streamline its 21 different programs and hire a housing director. The quality of housing in Milwaukee is also an issue. The homes here are old. Many of them were built in the late 1800s or the early 20th century. Elamine wants to offer people an opportunity for something new. He also wants buildings to include amenities like gyms and putting greens like the suburban apartments have.
A lot of times people are renting homes that don't have running water, that have holes in the ceilings and the walls. So we just want to make sure that we bring in nice, affordable housing.
Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett says providing people with affordable housing is a sign of respect.
I often say that we have macro problems in this community, in this state, and in this nation. But many times these macro problems have micro solutions. And a big part of that micro solution is having affordable, decent, safe housing for families and individuals.
3 years ago, Barrett announced an initiative to create 10,000 affordable homes in 10 years. Elamine guesses about 1,000 are under construction, including his projects. And he says he welcomes any competition. The more stable housing that's available, he says, the more stable the community will be. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the United States has seen a big decline in trust for a lot of our public institutions. What would it take to rebuild it? Join the conversation and share your ideas. Amanda Ripley is back with us. Should be a good conversation. The Biden administration enters office in the midst of bad job numbers and ongoing economic disruption from COVID-19. We'll look at some of the relevant executive orders that have come out in the last day and some other plans to tackle the health and economic crisis. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday, and we're going to bake some birthday cakes and other great treats. We're going to look at things we eat on birthdays and other celebrations, from the traditional birthday cake to desserts off the beaten path, maybe even some savory favorites. We'll get recipes, and you can share your own preferred celebration foods. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. If you're a big fan of palindromes, you're living in a special time. If you're not a big fan of palindromes, you're probably in the majority, but you're still living in special times. Quick reminder, a palindrome, that's a word, phrase, or number that's the same forward and backward. If you flip the letters or numbers in reverse, still says the same thing. So the word kayak is a palindrome, or Bob, Mom, Civic, Level, race car. I looked some up. I would not have thought of race car on my own. And there's some palindrome phrases, Madam, I'm Adam, or a man, a plan, a canal, Panama. So why is this a special time for palindromes? We saw this in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We're in the midst of a 10-day run of palindrome dates. Started yesterday, January 20, 2021, or 1-20-21. Flip 12021 backwards, you get the same thing. And it works that way for 10 days straight, from yesterday through the 29th. A 10-day run of palindromes. So celebrate accordingly. You won't have another chance for a 10-day, 5-digit palindrome until January 20th, 3021. Get that on your calendar now. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.